Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is July the 26th, 2018. And today we're going to, I want to talk about, building trust with clients. Let's say someone's just contacted you and, how to have build trust the whole way through so that you turn them from a prospect into a client. And talk about things like converting, having a high conversion rate from the prospect to, high-paying client, and how the phone conversation can make a big difference, how to do that, and what to do to prepare, before a phone call to talk to a new client, what to say to them, sometimes it's an email, sometimes it's a phone call, sometimes it's both, and how to establish your credibility there and build trust, and just some key questions to ask them, and how to demonstrate, kind of that genuine concern and empathy and understanding right away. And a lot of times that can be not just in your words, but in nonverbal communication like your voice, or if you're face-to-face, of course, your eye contact with them. So, and I just talk about how to do sort of your research beforehand, if it's possible to do research on the person that's calling. Sometimes it could be a top athlete or someone that's, a top high school student. And there's so much online these days that you can do some research on, say, their background or what they've accomplished. So, crafting sort of thoughtful questions and answers and then how to pivot your conversation according to what they really care about, really personalizing it to them and knowing, hopefully letting them be excited about wanting to set up a first appointment. It's best if they can kind of close themselves or ask you how to get started. And then if they don't, then what to do to help to get them started. So, I wanted to talk about some of those things. And then, these calls are always the second and fourth Thursday of the month. So the next one will be August the 9th and then August the 23rd. So you can put those on your calendar if you like as well. And I'm always open to your topics if you'd like to have a topic that you want to discuss or have me prepare for the next time. You can always let me know what that is, and then I'm happy to put in the topics that you need. So just check in with you guys about any comments that you have, what you're doing now with clients, and or questions that you have. I got a question from you, Michelle, and Ryan, since you're relatively new to the program, do you want to just introduce yourself briefly to Amy and Michelle and others that are on the call? Where you're from and what your interest is in sports psychology, why you wanted to take the course?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in Lehigh, Utah, just 40 minutes or so south of Salt Lake City. And I started a practice, a sports psychology practice, a little while back. And I've had a couple of good clients. And it is building so quickly that I wanted to make sure that I was up to speed and up to date on the latest and greatest. So when I found your course, it absolutely fit the bill, and I really enjoyed it. And really trying to find the best ways to connect with these athletes and teams. Our practice goal is to work with coaches and teams. The thing that kind of kicked me off of wanting to do this work was listening to coaches that were just berating kids and creating a really negative atmosphere for them to learn and grow in. And so our goal is to work with those coaches, any coaches and teams, in helping them come together and have a much better environment, much better experience as they go through their sporting careers as they grow, especially at the junior high and high school level for now.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Ryan. It's good to have you part of our program here.
Excited to be here.
And good. And that's so needed to be able to work with coaches and teams and teach coaches how to, yeah, coach in a positive way and to really build character in kids, not just be a win at all costs kind of attitude. Yeah, so great. And Amy, are you doing it, fill us in what you're doing now, or if you have any questions?
I don't really have any questions. I am currently working at the same place I did last summer. It's called Legacy, and it's a tennis center with educational things that they have, and it's a nice mix of inner city kids and then kids from out in the suburbs. So, you know, I enjoy that because it's a different group that I normally work with. But today I'm doing like positive self-talk, and I just pick a theme for the week and then, you know, work with that. So, yeah, everything's going well. I've been traveling around a little bit and just for fun and playing some golf, and that's really it. But I had a nice talk with Michelle, I guess it was like 2 months ago, and we talked about her successful program working with coaches, and that is something that that I would like to pursue more of, instead of just working with the athletes, to work with them and on their philosophies and making them the most effective that they can be working with their athletes, especially on the college level. That's what I like to do.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, that's great. The Legacy Tennessee Center, or Tennis Center, is a really good, great thing for you. And I know, because you're such an expert in tennis. So, so that's really good. Yeah, thanks, Amy. And I know, Michelle, you've got, you were working with, well, you had a question about a client, right? And also, did you mention, that you're working with coaches, too? Are you continuing that program?
Yep. Hi, Dr. Joanne. I'd like to get another group of coaches for the fall, and that's always the tricky part, is just getting the information out there and getting a group together, because it's a nice group dynamic that we had with our last group, and I think I had seven coaches for the whole year, and it was totally awesome. So I'm just putting out feelers.
Since Ryan's new and others are new, you want to explain just what it is that you're doing with them?
Oh, okay. Hi, Ryan. So we would meet once a month, and I had coaches from non-competing sports, and we would meet and discuss a sports psychology topic for the first half of our session. The sessions were about 3 hours. And then and a sports psychology topic that they could use to help their athletes. And then the second half was a peer mentorship. So they would come and present a challenge that they were dealing with or an opportunity they wanted to pursue. And we would be like their board of directors to help them work through that and process it. So it was just a really supportive environment, and they got so much more out of it than sports psychology. It's, you know, one of the girls in the group, she's a wellness coach, and she'd always wanted to write a children's book. And the first session, she said, that's the opportunity I'm pursuing, and I'm going to have it done and in Amazon before this, you know, this session is finished in June. And she did. She's got her book up on Amazon. So it was kind of fun. Like, it, you know, it started out as sports psychology. It was that, but it wasn't limited to that. And there was a lot of personal growth and development and just making commitments and creating intention. And they had accountability partners through the whole process. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. That's it in the
Yeah. It sounds great. Yeah. Just being able to have accountability and have coaches from non-competing sports is a great concept. So they feel like they're not, trying to, you know, if they're in the same sport, they wouldn't want to hide, you know, secrets or not tell each other what they're doing. So, and that way
exactly.
They can get perspective. Yeah, that's great.
The reason why I thought of this, and I think I said on one of the calls, is that the UBC rugby coach, I'm working with the rugby team there, and the coach said to me that, and he's a national level coach, and he said, you know, it's really hard being a coach because we have to get results in order to keep our jobs, and it's stressful, and we're expected to have answers and solutions where we don't always have those. And this provided an outlet for coaches to actually peer mentor each other and share each other's wisdom and experience and insight. And it was fantastic. So it was never a coach giving another coach advice, but more sharing from their own personal experience, you know, a situation that was similar to that coach that was presenting the problem. And then they would share from that place. And then the coach who was presenting the challenge, they could either take that information and use it, or, you know, if they didn't feel it was helpful, they didn't have to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so oftentimes if you hear a coach from another field, another sport, you know, sharing their experience with the same, and coaches can realize, wow, this is something that other people are dealing with as well. And hear it from another perspective somehow, how to deal with that same issue. It's so cool. And just feeling like they're not alone in this, in their coaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's good. So you could, I guess, in terms of finding new coaches, you could just first ask yourself what worked in terms of getting the first coaches together
mm-hmm.
for you. And can you use the same techniques? Did you just know different coaches or put out a flyer or something?
Well, I have been doing some contract work at this high performance center in Vancouver, and I sent an email to them because they've got probably 50 coaches at their club. And I said, I just gave them the sort of the bullet points of what I was wanting to do. And they said, well, we've got a staff meeting at the end of the week if you want to come and present on this and then see how much interest there is. And that's how I got my group. It was actually really easy.
Yeah, maybe hopefully you could do that again, present at another staff meeting or something like that. It would be excellent. Or you could do a part two kind of thing and maybe get some of the coaches that you've had before that want to continue on as well as new ones.
That's
one idea. Yeah. And then you could just also have a place on your website that says mentoring for coaches or a coach. What did you call it? Like a coach mentoring group?
We called it a mastermind group.
Yeah. That's a really good name, yeah. So they feel like they're not just getting taught in a seminar, but it's something where everyone can contribute their own expertise.
Well,
so,
when they're generating the conversation, it takes the pressure off me.
Michelle?
Yeah, exactly. You can just be like the facilitator, right?
Exactly. Yes,
Michelle,
Amy?
I have a question for you. Did you come up with the sports psychology topics, or did you try to get feedback from them on what they wanted presented as a sports psychology topic?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So once I had my group together, I sent them an email and asked them what are the topics that they'd like to see covered. And so I covered every single one of I hear Dr. Joanne's voice in my head all the time when you say, give them value, like, you know, deal with their pain point, and really you're there to serve them. So yeah, I asked them what sort of sports psychology tools and strategies are you most interested in? Would you find the most helpful to learn about? And I did those first. And then once I'd covered all of those, then I got creative and did my own.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, it's exciting. So maybe Ryan, that can give you some ideas too, working with coaches. Michelle, and then you had a question too? You want to say your question about a poker client, did you say?
Yeah. This is unreal.
Isn't it funny how we get all these different kinds of clients? It's great. It's a great field that we think I start out like with, like I start out with working with runners and triathletes because that's what they're familiar with. And then you get all kinds of things coming at you. I've gotten a bucking bronco from a rodeo. It's like, what the heck? I have no clue about that sport, but I was able to work with it. Yeah, and I've worked with chess players before, which may be a little similar. People are playing video games, and they're talking about people needing coaching for their video game competitions. It's crazy.
I know.
And then test-taking anxiety, that's a whole other area that I had not expected, and that you can get clients working in that area, anything that involves performance, and of course musicians and business people speaking. What's that?
Yep. I've had a few actors now contact me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Actors, yeah, also doctors. I've had orthopedic surgeon that wanted help with peak performance in the operating room and what to do when you open those double doors and letting the double doors be a symbol, a target for confidence rather than an oh, my God, a freak-out experience. All these different things involve performance. So you could, think about, branching out, each of you, and putting different areas on your website of the different types of coaching that you can do. And you don't have to be an expert at it either. I didn't know how to coach doctors. I certainly don't know how to operate on someone's knee as an orthopedic surgeon. But, as sports psychology coaches, we can ask good questions and listen. And, of course, Dr. Google is always a good place to do your research to find out what people are doing and YouTube to watch the different sports. And so any sport, you can watch on YouTube and see what the commentators are saying and what they critique a certain performance of somebody and what their goals are. And that's a great way to find out the lingo of a new sport and what it is that they want to, what they're looking for and the problems that they come into. So tell us, Michelle, your poker client, how did you get her and what's your question about her?
Oh, she found me by my website and she said what intrigued
as the poker expert in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. My brother's a poker player, so he's been kind of educating me in all the terms and so on. But, she was attracted to my website because it wasn't a cookie-cutter approach. There's actually a mental coach for poker players, but he uses sort of a formula that he applies to everybody, and she didn't like that. She wanted something that was more tailored to her, so that's why she chose me. And she just got back from Worlds, so she goes into the big games with a lot of money down. And her issue, she's got a couple, but the main one is she can get really impatient. And so I don't know if you know at all anything about poker, and I've only just recently learned anything, so excuse me if I'm making a mistake with the terminology, but when you've got your buy-in and the buy-in might be $500, and so you have to buy in, and if you have a crappy hand and you fold, you lose your buy-in. And for poker, it's important to just wait through the rounds till you get the hand that you're happy with. But it costs you money because this buy-in, the number actually keeps getting bigger and bigger. And so what happens with her is she gets impatient to play a hand because of, she's kind of bleeding money at this point if she's not playing hands. And so sometimes it's called on tilt, and she'll play a hand that she knows she really shouldn't be playing, but she hasn't played a hand in 5 or 6 rounds. And that's just cost her now $3,000 sitting at that table not playing.
Right. Yeah, it's tricky. I'm not an expert. I know a lot of sports, but and I've worked with chess players. other things. I haven't played poker, but I know about the same concept of patience applies to, yeah, to many sports. So one thing you could do is ask her to, you know, maybe there was one time when she was more patient. Ask her if there's, or a little bit more patient than other times. Or obviously, if she's been to Worlds, she's been successful. So ask her what's the one time when she was really, you know, more patient, and what did she do exactly, and what did that feel like? And get her experience of that, so you get her words, how she understands it, how she experiences it, and write all of that down. Even if you don't understand all the terms, it's okay. You can, you know, learn them later through your brother or Google, and if you want to. Yeah, and to say, you know, have her describe that to you, and then do, you know, create a vision. Even though if you don't know the terms, it's funny. You can, it's kind of like speak, like you're creating a visualization in French or a different language. Poker is a whole different language, but you could create a visualization then in the using her patient experience, the being patient, and what that takes, and have. And I guess, and one thing that is one word that comes to me is trust and faith. You know, having faith in your own abilities, and trust that the better, the a good hand will come. So that would be a good affirmation for her, power word statement to say is, you know, I trust that I'm going to get a good hand, or a good hand will. Instead of trying to do something, you know, play right now, you know, trust that a good hand will come to me. So saying that to herself would be a great way to, you know, let the good hand, you know, wait until there is a good hand. And that involves, you know, one good way to create that trust too is breathing is really important, and that can help you kind of slow down your mind when you're impatient. Usually you can point out to her that, you know, breathing usually gets tight and fast, and kind of that sort of panicking or saying, or trying to say, why am I getting this crappy hand, and asking those negative questions, why does this always happen to me? And but saying to yourself, patience, and then also so breathing is good, and so that when you're breathing, then you get asked what happens. You know, try an exercise of breathing, and then getting more mental clarity with that breathing, and being able to see that. Then she can ask herself, okay, what is this, a good hand or not, or rate the hand from 1 to 10, and. So that she can make a good decision. When you're breathing, when you're relaxed, and you've got that mental clarity, you can make, you know, much better decisions, and realize that this is, if you can then start to trust that a good hand is going to come, you know, wait for a better hand, and tell yourself another good power word would be waiting. I'm waiting for. I'm attracting. Attracting is a great word too. I'm attracting a good hand that's coming. It's coming soon. You know, a good hand is coming soon, and just tell so that it's this feeling of going. You know, getting closer, and that'd be another good power word. I'm getting closer to playing a good hand. And then, you know, another thing you could do is talk about that idea of patience, of, you know, thinking of, oh, just wanted to welcome someone. Did someone else just join us?
Yeah, hello, Dr. Joanna and everyone. This is Evan.
Sorry. Hi, Evan, how are you?
Very good.
Okay, great, thank you. Yeah, good to have you join us. So I'm just answering a question from Michelle. We're talking about a new client that she has who's a poker player, actually, you know, playing cards. And we're talking about patience, which applies to every sport. that she gets impatient with playing her hands. So, you know, have when thinking to Michelle is have her be, you know, talk about what would a good patient player look like. You know, she's probably seen other, been in the presence of really great players if she's just come back from Worlds, and see, have her describe the other great players. And she's probably done tons of studying on the topic. So what would a good player, a patient player, look like? What would they feel inside? What do they, what's on their face? Yeah, they always talk about the poker face. What does a good patient poker player's face look like? What do they, and how do they act? And just try to get, so get all the details. So she probably knows exactly what, where she wants to be, what a good patient player looks like. And then to, you know, really internalize that and say, I am a good patient player, and ask her to come up with maybe other words that patients, she might, because she's trying to do patience and she can't be patient, she's probably hating the word patience.
Yeah.
I'm not patient, I'm patient, I can't stand this. So maybe come up with other words, patient, I'm, you know, flowing, you know, I'm in the flow, I'm having fun, I'm enjoying the process, and time is on my side. That would be a good one, you know. Time is, you know, there's a good song, right? The old rock and roll Rolling Stones song, Time is on my side. She could be singing that.
Yeah.
You know, because time, see, when you're patient, time is your enemy. But thinking time is on my side is, you know, thinking, you know, the patient person, what are the advantages of being patient? You know, ask her that. You know, you get to, it's like in so many sports, you know, like Amy with your tennis, you wait for the other person to make a mistake as opposed to having to, you know, kill every shot. Wait for the mistake of the other person. That's a good way to be patient. Then you can have the advantage over them. And Ryan, I don't know, which sports are you working with, too? Are you there, Ryan?
Basketball, football, softball, lacrosse. I have a dancer, so kind of wide-ranging right now, working with a strength and conditioning coach, all kinds of athletes.
Yeah. So can you think of a situation where being patient works in those sports? Or waiting for someone else to make a mistake?
Yeah, they all have to be patient. Like I mentioned, one of the things that caused me to want to go into this field specifically was coaches creating a very negative mindset for their athletes and causing them to get stressed and get impatient and try to push a situation that wasn't ready for it. So patience, a sense of taking what is available in the moment is one of the big things that we work on. Because the athletes tend to worry about what has already happened, what might happen in the future, and it takes away focus from what they need to be doing right now, which by itself takes away patience. You have to be patient and take what the moment gives you, do your absolute best in that moment, and the rest will come. And so that's a big learning for my clients, big for sure.
Right. So that's great. Yeah, thank you, Ryan. That's a good perspective to have. So, yeah, and part of it's being grateful for it, just being, usually we're thinking, God, what I don't have, yeah, like the cup is, glass is half empty as opposed to half full, but look at it as half full, grateful for what I do have and what, yeah, like you say, Ryan, and all of you, what can I do in this situation? And sometimes being patient, like Michelle with the poker, it would be to just not to wait, to not act on it, say, what do I have here? What kind of hand do I have? A crappy hand. So the best thing is to wait until I get a good hand and trust that a good hand is coming soon. So I think that would be really good. And to say to herself, see her, and then, you know, kind of internalize that to say, see, I am a patient poker player, if I'm a patient poker player, what characteristics does that look like? You know, someone who is breathing and is relaxed, comfortable in the situation, and somebody who is confident and just a cool, collected, confident, knows that's the person that's going to end up being better off in the end. And it also really lowers stress level, right? I was thinking another thing you could do is sometimes it's good to take her out of the situation and think of other situations like animals. You know, think of an animal that's waiting for its prey. You know, you could even look that up, not right now, but later look up, on YouTube, animal waiting for its prey or something. And you look at the animal and it's just, you know, looking and darting and looking for, say, this other animal waiting for it to dart out or waiting for just that right moment to go after the prey. And you look at its eyes and its whole face, and it's how the animal is patient, waiting for just that right moment to do the attack or to do its thing and to go get dinner, right? So I'm thinking of a cheetah or a lion or some animal that's waiting and just looking. And then you see on the animal this total focus, you know, focusing on what they want. So, yeah, it's kind of really getting into your response area, into this, Michelle. I hope that's okay. That is helpful.
You're awesome. Thank you. And thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, that's good. Evan, are you there? I just want to bring you in, too. Do you have any thoughts on your athletes being patient or how to be more develop patience even in any sport?
I think in lots of sports, and I think about soccer right now because, you know, there was the World Cup, so I kind of followed a lot. And I'm glad we won in France. I was happy to be there to celebrate. That was fun. But in soccer, you know, you have to wait sometimes. Just, you know, you push, you try to score, and then you will hit the post, you will miss, you know, you won't make it. And at some point, you might be frustrated and getting nervous, and you hear some players saying, you know, you've got to be patient, you know, and at some point, you're making the good moves, you know, and that will go into the goal. So really not being frustrated and keeping patient, even in soccer, is really important.
Yeah, exactly. So, Amy, are you still there? I think she said she had to leave early. Oh, okay, I was going to ask her as well for her comments on that, but I think she had to leave for a meeting too. So thank you, Evan. Yeah, in soccer you have to wait. And notice that, I guess part of being patient is noticing when you're getting impatient, you know, what are the bodily signs for getting impatient? Your heart rate goes up or your breathing gets shallow, your muscles might get tight, you might just feel that antsy feeling inside. And so it have, and Michelle, you could have for the poker player and notice, you know, write down what physical and mental symptoms she has when she gets impatient, and so that she knows, oh, okay, so I'm feeling this way, so now I need to go into my patient mode. going to my plan, you know, develop a plan for patients, and a plan, you know, develop that with her, you know, maybe including something like, you know, breathing, taking 5 deep breaths, and saying her power words, like a good hand is coming. I'm good at waiting. You know, she's probably thinking I'm terrible at waiting, right? but switch that around to I'm good. I'm becoming better at waiting every moment. I'm getting, because it's not just waiting. It's getting good at attracting a good hand, or attracting the best thing for me. So. Attracting. Yeah, I was just writing that down too. It's good. Best hand for me. And there's a, you know, and if she can actually visualize, I think visualization is really good to visualize that the hand that she wants. Oftentimes we attract what we picture in our minds. And if she keeps thinking, oh, God, this another bad hand is coming, oh, another bad hand, then that's what we attract. But if she can visualize a good hand, then that's more, it doesn't guarantee that it happens, but it certainly increases the chances of that happening. Yeah. So, yeah, hope that's helpful. And, Michelle, did you have a question about stamina, too? Yeah,
I just feel like I don't want to hijack this whole. You've done me such a big favor by answering that question. I don't want to take too much time of everybody, so I'm okay. I'm good for now.
Unless okay, great. Yeah, I'll go into my topic here, but I'll just mention with stamina because it's a long event. Also, I just wanted to mention with one other thing with patients, my own experience, like with a runner. With running, I know in a race recently, there was someone in front of me that was really faster. She's won everything and never beaten her before, but I noticed in this one race she was struggling, and so I was coming up on her really slowly, and I could have just killed myself and tried to just pass her really fast, and then, but I might have, with all that extra effort of having to put in more run faster. After I passed her, I could have burned out and she probably would have passed me back. But instead, I just came up like the animal and prey, would and just crept up on her slowly so it didn't pick up too much energy. And then I waited behind her. She didn't know I was there, so I waited behind her and just rested while I was running behind her for a few seconds to collect myself and really gain strength. And then I made my move and went by her and surged by and was able to make a really strong, passing her. And that way I just blew her away and she wasn't able to, I think she got, demoralized and wasn't able to come back to me. And so it worked that way. And that was another example of being patient in a sports situation where you can, you can use all your effort to just blow away some, to use all your effort in one situation and then burn out, or you can say, okay, I'm going to just approach this gradually and then rest, and then when the time is right, make my move, pass someone. So that's another way, a situation of kind of being patient and figuring out your timing. And I'll just mention with stamina, that you mentioned that sometimes it's hard in a situation where there's a long event to have stamina. Just important to make sure you get good sleep the night before, two nights before, especially since you might not get good sleep the night before a major event. That helps with stamina so that you're kind of putting sleep in the bank, and also and making sure that you have water when you're in an intense situation like a chess game or a poker game or any sport. Often we forget to drink water or drink, something with electrolytes like Cytomax or something where you have powder you could put in the water that gives you extra electrolytes and extra or protein drink, something if that's allowed to be able to have enough fluids that can really help with stamina too. And then being able to take, if you take restroom breaks, make the most you can out of the breaks that you do have, even going to the restroom to stretch and to take nice deep breaths so you can come back. So, so good. Those are great questions. Thanks, Michelle, for that great question. And Amy and Ryan for your comments, and Evan and for your comments. And so now I wanted to just go to talk a little bit about the when you're on the phone with someone, with converting as a prospect to client. I've had, sometimes you can just have a really good rapport, or have a good skill for being on the phone, and I've been able to have really good conversion rates with clients over the years with people calling. And as you know, just kind of has happened naturally, and I'm trying to figure out how do I do that, and how can I translate that to all of you, so that you can have that same experience of getting, getting more clients and converting more clients. So one thing is, first, I'll often get either an email or a phone call or both, from a client. You might get that, or some kind of inquiry on your website you might get. And so I have a standard email that I send them back if I get an email and say, just explaining how I work. And I'll send that to you guys all, too, so that you have a copy and you can customize it to your own needs. But it's good to just describe how you work and have the email give links to your website, your coaching page, not just to the home page, but to a specific coaching page where they, and if they're, let's say, soccer player, for you, Evan, or someone that's, or football for Ryan, or or poker for you, now that, Michelle, you're the poker expert, which is great. you can have that a section on your website that's just for that sport, and then send them to the specific page on that sport. And that really builds credibility right away that they're saying, oh my gosh, this person really has a page just for me, for this sport. So that's an idea that can build help you build credibility right away, and so you can send them a link to that page. So it's good if they send you an email to send back an email before you have a phone call with them. That way you're building credibility beforehand, and they've already built trust in you. And if you have a video of any sort, you can make a really short, easy one with, there's a program called Zoom that I'm using now, ZOOM.com, and it's free. It's easy. I was using Google Hangouts, which was okay, but now they've made that a little bit more complicated. So Zoom, I think, is better, and you can just download it. It's an app, and then just be able to, easily record a video yourself. If you're with, you want to get a testimonial from a client, that's a great way, too. You can do it like a two-way call. A video call, or you can do one yourself and just record one or two, real short, just 1 minute or 1.5 minutes for just talking about yourself, and just so people can hear your voice and see you. And if you want to stand, you could either be outside or be in, if you have an office with some plaques behind it, some certificates, and once you're certified in this program, I send you your certificate. You can have that and have it framed and put on your wall. And so, just lends credibility there that you since you've achieved lots of things, and so you could just do a video just saying hi, and then say your name. When you're certified, I'm a certified performing edge coaching professional, and then talk about your sports and what it is that you focus on. And it's really so people can build that trust. And videos are the quickest way to do that because they not only just see words, which words are just, you know, maybe 5% of communication. But when they see a video, they hear your voice and they hear you. They see you. You know, you can look right into the microphone and just have a really personable way about you, and people get a sense right away of, there's been studies showing that people just pick up on a person's personality, within 15 seconds of seeing a video, much quicker than words, than an email. So if you can do that, I like to dress, in terms of dressing, so I look athletic, both athletic and professional. If you have something that helps you look both athletic and professional, that can help. And so, you know, first they see the video, and then they and then preparing for a call, send a standard email, you always want to customize the first line or two based on what their email said to you. So I'm glad that, you know, say something like, I'm glad that you're good to hear from you, and thanks for reaching out about your daughter or your son's basketball or whatever it is that specifically that they were talking about. And I can use the example of often parents will contact me about their child. So have a conversation with the parent, and then afterward the child. And so you got this email you sent to them and say, I'm available during these times to talk, and if you could choose one of these times, we could have a little conversation about how I could be of help. And then hopefully email back and say, yeah, I can talk at this time. You give them a phone number to call. And if they can call you, that's better because they reach out to you and it shows that they're interested. It feels better than me calling them. If you have to call them, that's okay. But if you can have them call you, then it's just a good sense that you get a sense of their interest. So if you know that they're going to call at a certain time, what I do ahead of time to prepare for the call is to, you know, do something. As we're all athletes or active in some way, you know, it's good to just take a short walk, or I'll do some floor exercises, or stretches, jump around the room, do something to get myself mobilized and ready. You know, if you're doing some kind of physical activity, we all know that really helps with mental clarity and helps you to just feel good, feel energized, and so you can really focus on the conversation. So even just 5-10 minutes walking outside can help you really clear the brain and clear yourself out, and so that you're really ready for the call. I do the same thing for before an important client meeting or if it's an appointment. And so, a little bit of exercise or, you know, meditation is good too, or visualization of what you want how you want the conversation to go. So that's great. But, you know, why not do both at the same time if you're going to visualize and meditate? You can accomplish both at once by going for a quick walk, and you can be visualizing while you're moving. That's much better. So you're activating your muscles and getting everything moving. You're getting oxygen into your brain and visualizing how you want the conversation to go. That's so much better. I've had really good results with that when I've done media interviews. Sometimes you might get interviewed by a radio station or TV or or someone writing a book or something, and if you're you know, go out for a quick walk or run, then your body is much more ready, and you just come back and you're just right on when you talk to that person, and you feel good. It creates endorphins, so you're able to have fun with the conversation. It just loosens you up, and you're not thinking, oh, this is it, you know, I've got to get this call, or is this a life or death situation. Instead, you know, loosen up and think, okay, this is just I'm not pitching to this person, rather than thinking I got to sell to this person. You want to think just in terms of conversation. You're just having a conversation and finding out about them, learning about their situation and being helpful. So, to prepare for the call, go for a quick walk, visualize how you want it to go, use the restroom if you need to beforehand, always have water there so that your voice is clear. And so you've got enough, if you're low on energy, you know, I'll drink V8 juice or something that has a little bit of, you know, vitamins in it. Has something like I'm doing right now, and sit there and, so you've got enough nutrition, and breathe, take a few deep breaths. And then it's really good to smile. Even though if you're on the phone, they might not see you, people pick up the energy when you're smiling, your voice sounds different, your energy is different, it's much better if you're smiling. So, like I'm smiling to all of you right now, and we're having a great conversation. And then let's say you're talking to the parent, and you can just, they call and then just you want to be just asking them questions and getting them to talk and just say, yeah. Or if you call them, you can say, hi, I'm, and say your name. Just returning your call about your son and his baseball or whatever it is that they're talking about. And, yeah, I just want to know how I can be of help. If they're they're calling you about their child, say, tell me a little bit about what's going on. And you just want to have them open up to get their language of what's going on first. And get them to talk and listen. This is where you want to listen really deeply for their concerns and reflect back what you hear, if you can, not in exact words, but the similar, you know, your own words, what you hear them saying. If you're not sure about something, you know, you can clarify what it is that so you understand, and just showing that you are really listening on many levels. You're listening for their words, their concerns, but also their deep emotions. A lot of times parents are calling and they're thinking they haven't done a good job as a parent, and so and a good enough job. I hear that all the time, I just had someone call yesterday about a girl, we'll call her Samantha, and she was in track and field running and letting the other girls kind of run over her, get intimidated by other girls. And so first I ask, what's your daughter's name? And so you get a name so you can refer to someone specifically while in the conversation. So we talk about, Samantha and what's her age, and she's 16, and you want to get that's a girl, the name and their age and their sport right away, and then find out what's going on with them. And you want to really empathize. And she did say to me, yeah, I feel like I didn't teach her correctly. I taught her to be really humble and not to speak up. And now I feel like she's not confident enough. She's not aggressive enough out there. And so I just reassured her. I know it's hard to be a parent, and there's a lot you need to do, and kind of empathizing with her. But I said, it's every parent's trying to find that balance between teaching someone how to be humble and how to be confident. I said that you're really being a great parent by doing a good job calling here and reaching out for help. And so I affirmed her in that way. And also I said that I can work with your daughter, and then also I could work with you in separate sessions, also as a parent, if you would like to learn how to be a good sports parent. So in that way, sometimes you can get two clients, one working with the child and one working with the parent. If some of you are working with coaches, same thing, like Ryan or Michelle, Amy, Evan, if you're working with coaches, you can maybe work with coaches and also work with the athlete kids. And then you want to give them, say, examples of if they have a situation, how you could help them in that specific situation. So not just marketing to them, but, you know, if you can give a tip right there about what it is that they, how you could help. And give a client story. If you have been working in that same sport, that's the best if you can be really sports specific. And say if it's a runner, I can talk about my own running experience, and then I can talk about runners I've worked with. If you've worked with a lot of high school kids, and this is a high school kid, a parent calling about their high school child, and talk about how you have a lot of experience working with high school kids. So try to tap into your own expertise and anything that you've done that's similar to what they want. You know, tap into that and be really reflective of what they are saying. And just be sure to ask follow-up questions. You know, tell me more about that. Or when, you know, this, say when Samantha gets run over by other kids, what do you mean by that? And just ask the parent to elaborate. So you really get their words, and that way you're building a relationship with them right away and getting the feeling that you care about them, that you really get it, you understand what's going on, and then say that you work with lots of, work a lot with that kind of situation, and being able to build confidence, and then ask about their goals. So you want to talk about the barriers first, or the issues, the problems. And then if you can talk about their goals, what the parent wants for their child and what the child wants and what their goals are, and then say align your goals with theirs. So you want to connect up, and you don't want to just impose your own program. Like Michelle, you were saying that one person had a cookie cutter program for poker players. And I think people don't really like something that is too cookie cutter, but they want emphasize it's really personalized for you, for your clients, and for what you need, based on their specific concerns. So you can talk about that and what they need, and how you could help them with their goals. If they're talking about difficulties performing under pressure, then really zoom in on that part, not just a general program, but, you know, talk about how to help them performing under pressure and different kinds of pressure. Tell me specifically what pressure situations is that person under, and kind of really zero in on that specific concern. And of course, as you work with the person, you'll be, you know, broadening that out to lots of areas probably, but right then, you want to just kind of go for what their specific point is that they're concerned about. Often there's, you know, parents or people will call after a crisis or after some kind of, they just had a really bad game or really bad performance, really bad race, something happened. And so ask them to tell you about that, exactly what happened there and how they felt and the details of that, because that, when people talk about the bad experiences they had, they're really opening up to you and telling you they're being vulnerable with you. And so that's where you can be of help and you can really comfort them and show them how much you can really step in and how you have good solutions for that. Anytime they can share with you the tough parts, what they're going through, that's really good to have them elaborate on that. And then you want to, I think it's really powerful to talk about the visualization process and creating a personalized MP3 for them. And that's where you want to use the name of the person. Let's say, you know, so this, for instance, this parent called about her daughter Samantha. And so I would say, so with Samantha, I would ask her, Samantha, tell me about, so then you really get in, you're like role-playing and saying, so it's not just a general kind of thing, but saying I do a personalized, customized visualization process with each client. So I would say, ask Samantha, tell me about a peak performance or a time when you felt really good or were performing at your best. And I would get her, ask Samantha, keep using the name of that person, you know, Samantha, what are you, what were you feeling? What were the highlights of the game? What were the lowest times? What were you feeling? What were you feeling in your body? And so really get into that. So I get Samantha's words and her feelings and her experiences, and then I would create for her a visualization audio that she can play on her iPod or iPhone or any device, and you know, but using her story, her narrative, to recreate those feelings when she felt her best, the power and strength and confidence. So you know, when that's really a powerful technique, if you can use that person's name, say of the daughter or son that they're talking about, and take them through. Tell the parent what you would do with them with the visualization, and then generalize that and say, I would do that for Samantha for, you know, for that peak performance. And then each time when we did a session, whatever Samantha is talking about, I would, you know, we would create another visualization based on the learning of that session. So, you know, so let's say create a visualization, a whole playlist. That's a good word to use, playlist, because kids create playlists all the time on their phone for music. So now they can create a playlist for a Michelle playlist or a Ryan playlist or a Evan or Amy playlist. You know, just for your visualizations, and have a whole menu of those, one for dealing with confidence, one for handling pressure, one for dealing with negative thoughts, one for a specific game or race coming up. So you, and then tell them how they could use that. And so, you know, that's a way to just, I mean, you could talk also about your coaching techniques and what you do with them. As well, and that works really well too. I find that people really latch on to the visualization, and that they really get something when you tell them that you get an audio file, an MP3 each time of a specific situation that they are dealing with for that week. They really latch on to that, so that's a good thing to emphasize for them. And I teach you, because in all the modules, Ryan, I know you're going through those now, Evan and Michelle and Amy, you've gone through all those modules. And you can always go back through them in the program, showing that you're, you know, showing you how to do the visualizations customized for them. So, yeah, and then, so I say that, and then I develop a script. Let's see. Sometimes it's helpful to have a little script of what you say. When people ask you, how do you work, you know, they have a kind of standard thing that you say. Or you can just say it in a way that it's important that you are really personalized with them, and that you are speaking right to them, that you don't sound like you're just reading something, because you want to customize it for what they have said there. So, you know, in this case with I'd say with Samantha, I would do this. I could see her in the office or on the phone. That's important to emphasize both of those things. If you can see people, I just have a home office here myself. You can do that, or you can see them at the on their playing field, wherever it is, or in a high performance center. You know, like you have Michelle, wherever that you might have an office. So tell them that both are just as effective. Some parents might think that phone conversations aren't as good as in-office, And if they can, if they're local, if they can come to your office, that's great. If they can't, really emphasize that the phone, it works great as well. And I have found that the phone conversations are just as good as in person. And so that way you can work with people all over the country and all over the world. And if you have somebody in another country, you can use Skype or Zoom, any of those video kind of calls. So all that works really well. And then you want to emphasize the benefits, you know, what they would get with their, you know, with the program. You can say, you know, building confidence and motivation and, you know, handling negative thoughts, preventing burnout, you know, things like fine-tuning your concentration, your working with mental rehearsal, visualization, and fear is a big one. If they are really anxious about something, working on their fears and fear of that failure or fear of too much success, it could be all those things. Pick out what it is that they are specifically interested in, and then really zoom in on that benefits for that particular type of thing. And then I really emphasize that this type of coaching is, I'm focusing on the whole person, not just their ability to win. It's a different kind of coaching. And like you talked about, Ryan, that you can say to, say, a parent that coaches are so focused sometimes on a win at all costs attitude that really can be harsh on people. But you can say that that you, as a sports psychology coach, when you're working with an athlete, that you're focused on the whole person, and that you are working on, you know, those outward qualities of you know, being aggressive, being competitive, being strong, being confident. But you're also working on the softer qualities inside of being patient and being reflective and learning from what's going on and really seeing the situation deeply and character building. And those are the kinds of things that can help an athlete, not just in their athletics, but in their school, in their relationships with other kids, and it's going to help them get a better job. And, you know, then broaden it out to let them know that this is going to help, your coaching is going to help them for life. I also emphasize avoiding the negative part, that if, let's say, their child is really upset and really anxious right now, and saying that if the problem is if they don't deal with this now, with the anxiety, the anxiety can spread out into their other areas of life, so they end up choking on tests and not doing well with their peers and having problems socially and in careers, and it can be in other areas. So this is a really important time to address this issue, because when they get it in sports, then they get it in life, and they can move, can use these same techniques. You'll find that they'll be able to use these same techniques throughout every aspect of their life. So that's really an important way to emphasize that. And parents really love that, and that can get them to say yes to you right away. Because that's what parents really want, is just to, most parents will say, I just want my child to be happy. And then for those of you who are working with coaches too, like Ryan, these same techniques could be used with them to help coaches to work on the whole person. Of course, they're not sports psychologists per se, but they can broaden their goals to, for character building and being able to handle all kinds of situations and to for personal growth, as well as just winning that game. I know it's a tough balance, because, as you say, coaches are paid for getting results, but they also need to, if they're really creating a negative environment, then they're not going to get those results. And if they create a really positive environment, they get good results and good athletes and good people from it, and happy parents. So, and then the client will ask about I was going to mention humor too. If there's any way that you can work a little bit of humor into the talking with them, getting them to laugh a little bit or lighten up, that really helps the situation, and just helps people just feel like this is I say that I make it fun for the client. So that's really good. And you want to look for similarities of between you and the client. If you do the same sport as they do, you know, bring that out. If you are if I'm talking with a girl like this, for instance, Samantha, and I'm a female coach, sports psychology coach, I'll say, you know, women need really good role models, female role models. And so it really helps to have a woman working with her. So, and the mom really appreciated that. Same thing with a guy. If you are male and you're working with a guy that's having difficulty, sometimes they look up to a male coach, so that you could have the gender part be something similar. Or if you anything that you can create that finds similarities there, then bring that out. If you're in the same town as they are, or from some town back east, and you are from that town, just mention that so that it brings people together, builds more trust that way. Yeah, and then you want to mention some of the results that they might get, like, you know, kids can really achieve that optimal state of mind to help, you know, your child, or help you perform the best under any conditions. You know, you can gain new motivation and confidence, break through those mental barriers, and really realize your full potential. Sometimes it's just a person might come to you that's just wanting to create a healthy, balanced lifestyle, get into shape, and or recover from an injury. So you can emphasize those kinds of results. Sometimes it's just a highly stressful situation, and so you want to be able to say that you can teach them to handle stress, anxiety, or any other health or injury concerns, and dealing with fears, to be more confident. And then usually a client will ask you, you want to wait for them to ask about moving forward. If you say, well, let's set up a session or something, then they might think you're a little pushy. If you wait for them, here's the situation where, Michelle, you talked about patience before, and here's where we can be patient, practice our patience as sports psychology coaches on the conversation with the person, and waiting, being patient for them. Usually after 20 minutes or so, I'll find that they'll want to ask, well, how do you work, or how can we set up a next session? And that's where you can get into the details of how you work with that and what they would get. And they might ask you how many sessions are needed, and you could be flexible with that. I'll often say, if I work with people 2 to 3 months for, say, 8 to 12 sessions is good, sometimes 6 months or sometimes longer if needed, but it's up to, you know, we work as a partnership and we figure that out together. And they'll ask, you know, how long are each of your sessions, that kind of thing. You could say, an hour, 45 minutes. If it's a younger person, maybe it could be a shorter time. And then you want to deal with any objections that they have. Most of the time, I think people that are calling, I find that they have the income to be able to do this, or they wouldn't be calling you. Occasionally someone might say, I don't have that. If they ask your fees and they say it's too high, that they can't afford that, you could try to work, if you want to work with the person, you can work, you know, offer a shorter session for a lesser amount of money is a way to be able to make it more affordable for them. If it's a person that is a high caliber, you know, an Olympian or Olympic hopeful or a professional, sometimes you could offer to do first 3 sessions complimentary, or a few sessions complimentary for them to help them to get to, you know, this higher level. But you don't ever want to say, of course, you'd like to get a testimonial from them. That would be great, but you don't want to say, I'll offer three free sessions in exchange for a testimonial, because that's contrived and it's not ethical to do that. So you want to just offer them the three complimentary sessions, or work with the person if they're at a high level. I'll do that sometimes. And then if you have good results, then ask for a quotation from them or a comment about their work together. And most of the time people are happy to give that afterward. And so you just wait for, it's another situation of patience where you work with them and then ask for a testimonial afterward. And then that makes it really, it's just a wonderful experience doing that. So you can talk about the details of how you work with the person. And I usually just say, I've got these times available for the next week for appointment. Which one would you like? And rather than just asking, would you like to set up an appointment, you can, if you say, I've got these times available here, usually they'll just pick one. So that makes it easier for them. They're just picking between A and B as opposed to saying yes or no. And then depending on where you are in your practice, you can either, if you're starting out, you can do a complimentary consultation first. You can offer to do that. Sometimes parents will say, okay, well, I'm convinced. This is great. Now I got to convince my child. How do I convince my child of this, that this works? And I would say, first, if you have a website or a video on your website, send them a link so that the parent and the child can watch the video there of you talking to them, so they get a sense of who you are. And I often say, sometimes kids, rather than calling this sports psychology, sometimes it's helpful to say I'm a performance coach, because I call myself both. And so kids really relate to that, a performance coach. And it's not as intimidating as the word sports psychology, where that relates to something being wrong with them. So that can help to help the parent to be able to talk to the child about this. And then you could point to examples of, you can just look online for top athletes that have used sports psychologists or sports psychology, and there's all kinds of examples, and point to how these days it's, top athletes feel like this is essential for their mental, performance, and that it's a really gives them a leg up on the competition. And that a secret weapon is a great word. I think of telling, athletes think that working with a sports psychology coach is their secret weapon against, because most other the athletes might not be using this. So if they can have a secret weapon, they really like that concept of something special that they have that no one else has. So that's a really good thing to put in there too. And then after the session, after talking with the parent, they'll often say, okay, well, let's set up a session. Or they'll say, I want to talk to my child first and then get back to you. And then you could give them time to get back the next day. And in the meantime, you could send them more information. Send them an article or send them something that you've done, a video or audio, or send them a gift, something that you've written, so that they get some real content, some tips, not just marketing, but something that really helps them. And then they'll much more likely get back to you that way. And then usually they'll set up the first session with you. And I often do blocks of sessions of, say, four at a time, or you could do a monthly fee of, I do, I charge $795 or $995. I've gone up in my fees. After a while, you can increase your fees and do that for, charge that for four sessions. And if they want more sessions, then they can do that as well. So, so I wanted to just give you those tips about how I've worked with clients, with people on the phone, and have been able to easily convert them from prospects to paying clients. So I just wanted to, I know we're getting, I've kind of taken up a lot of time, but I just want to ask, check in with all of you, ask if you have any questions or what questions or comments you have, if this is helpful. You guys can jump in, anybody.
It's been great, Joanne. Thank you. I've enjoyed participating today.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Yeah, it's so good to have you on the call. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. What was most helpful for you, Ryan? Was any particular tip that was helpful or any nugget that was good?
You know, for me, the recordings are kind of interesting because I work with a lot of female athletes. So I actually have my wife do the voice recordings so that it's in a female voice for them. So, you know, hearing you talk about the recordings and how you make them personalized for the particular athlete, very helpful. And working on fine-tuning those, they'll get better.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, others, Michelle or Evan, Amy, do you have questions or comments or what was most helpful for you?
Oh, hi, Dr. Joanne. Thank you very much. That was wonderful. And I really appreciate the discussion on patience and just the comment you made about the poker player just reflecting back on a time when she was patient and had a patient mindset and really just getting into the feelings around that and what the experience was like and recreating that in the future. So I found that really helpful. Thanks.
Good. Yeah, that's great. We can all use that, I think.
Yeah.
Patience is it's a wonderful thing to have for sure. And letting the cards, letting the cards come to me. How's that? Something like that, she could say. Yeah, the cards are on my side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I wish you the best. Congratulations, Michelle, on getting a client that's just come back from Worlds. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Who knows? You'll be the poker psychologist.
Yeah.
The poker expert. Yeah, it's funny we fall into these different areas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can take a percentage of the earnings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's like a whole new world that you can learn about. Yeah, and Evan, are you there? What was most helpful for you, or do you have any comments or questions?
Yep. No, I don't have any question. I like the discussion around poker, and I will listen to the recording because I arrived late, but I'm definitely interested in that because I like poker. I played myself just for fun, and I was considering, coaching poker players around the mental aspect. So I'm interested in that, and I like the part of the discussion that I attended around patience, and I will listen to the recording. For sure.
Okay, great. Well, that's interesting. Wow, how cool is that, that you were interested in coaching poker players, and here's Michelle has one. We have a live one.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So, yeah, that'll be great. We'll all be rooting for you, Michelle, for your poker player. For you. And yeah, and thank you, Evan and Ryan and Amy and other people that are listening to on mute here. And great, so wonderful talking to all of you, and we'll have our next call on, put on your calendar, August the 9th and then August the 23rd. So we'll have this recording up shortly and send you out the notes. And yeah, it's always just such an honor to work with all of you. Congratulations on all the good work that you're doing with your athletes. So we'll talk
to
you.
Dr. Joanne.
Yes.
Dr. Joanne.
Yeah.
Sorry, one really quick question.
Okay.
Do you have a template that you can send us on creating a pregame process?
Yeah. So pregame, for what specifically were you thinking of? Like a pregame process for like your ritual or?
Yeah, like a ritual. So that 24 hours before competition, what the athlete can do to just create consistency. So if they have the same process every time, it will help them be more consistent in their performance. And then they can sort of quiet their thoughts a little bit because they sort of have a plan and it's in their gym bag. And they go, okay, so 2 hours before my event, I'm doing this. 1 hour before my event, I'm doing this. You know, walking onto the field, I'm doing this. Like, do you have sort of a generic one that we could sort of use as just a guideline, and then we could tailor it to the athlete or the sport that they're doing?
Yeah, I've got some things I've written on that, and I'll that might be a really good conversation for topic for our next call too. So, because there's a lot we could talk about with that, and then depending on what sport it is, because some sports they sort of practice right up to the sport itself, and others they taper for a while beforehand. But there's certain things mentally that I think are really key to all sports.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Probably the mental piece is the biggest, I guess. And I think it's important, for the athlete to create a process that works for them. And because what works for one may not work for another. But if I just had a kind of like a checklist or just a bit of a template to follow, I feel like I'm not doing a very good job in that area.
Okay, yeah, that's great. Yeah, exactly. Things like, just because as we get close to an event, oftentimes people get really, crazy and scared and forget, and then the mind starts racing and then we forget things. So, it's important to have
that. They get crazy,
that, like,
exactly.
Yeah, sometimes like a race, somebody going to a race, and sometimes wait till the night before to check on the directions, how to get there, and then the internet isn't working, and you think, oh God, my GPS isn't working. How do I get to the race? And then things like that. If you do that early, 2 days before, it's much, and you realize, okay, I know how to get there, I got the directions, and you don't have to be freaking out about that, those little details. So things like that are really important, as well as, things like your MP3 visualizations, the ones that you created for your client. You want them to have that on a playlist that they can easily, nowadays, it's so much easier. They can take that with them to a game and they create that ahead of time so that they take Michelle with them or take Evan or Ryan or Amy, take you home with them so to speak. Have you in their ear. Okay, so and I'll work on that more of a specific kind of template checklist send that out, and then we'll can make that the topic of our next call too here in August. Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, so I'll send that. Thank you. I love your ideas, all of you guys. Anything ideas you have for topics, feel free to send them my way. And we'll talk. Have a good week, and we'll talk next time on August the 9th. Then, and I'll be in touch with by email till then.
Thank you, Dr. Joanne.
Thanks. Have a good day. Bye now.
Bye.